With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. In 2019, 29-year-old Irene Gakwa made a big move. She flew from her home in Kenya to the United States to start a new life. Irene had always loved helping people, and she was going to turn that love into a career by studying nursing. Fortunately, Irene already had a support system in the States. Her two brothers, Chris and Kennedy, lived in Boise, Idaho, and she was going to join them. Everything was going according to plan, and Irene even fell in love. But her family alleges that her boyfriend was no Prince Charming. They say that he was controlling and working to isolate Irene from her family. On February 24th, 2022, Irene had a video call with her parents. She hasn't been seen since. Did she, as her boyfriend claims, decide to pack up and move once again, or has something much worse happened to Irene? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Irene Gakwa. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again and, you know, joining us because, as you can hear, Ethan is back.
At least for this week.
Okay. Well, don't start saying stuff like that. So, yes, you're back. We're back. We're ready to go, right?
Yes.
All right. Everything's good. We don't really have a ton of announcements or anything. Like, we're just going to get right into the story.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. The case of Irene Gakwa was actually brought to my attention by Rona, who hosts the Jury File podcast. She's been working really hard to bring awareness to this case, so I wanted us to cover it as well. You know, I just saw she posted on Twitter about it, and she's like, why is nobody talking about this? I said, well, I had never heard about it. I did not know. And I saw that this is a very, you know, open and active case from February of this year.
Right. So I'm assuming there's not a whole lot of information because it's so new?
Well, yes. I mean, that would be a fair assumption, but there's actually been a lot going on in this case. So I do have more to talk about than I think I even realized when I agreed to cover this, like enough that we're making a full episode about it. It is important because, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, but Irene is a Black woman, right? And we have covered the cases of Black women on this podcast a lot. And in every single one, we pretty much, and I think without fail, talk about how terrible the police investigation is into it. However, I am not saying that with this case.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's why we have enough information right now to do an episode on it, you know, after she's only been missing, you know, for 4 or 5 months, because there's actually been an investigation. You know, if we were to cover the case of Akia Eggleston 4 or 5 months after she had disappeared, there wouldn't have been much to say.
Right.
There was a little bit more to say in the case of Kiara Coles because her case did make national news very early on. And, you know, in addition to Chicago PD investigating that case, the U.S. Postal Service investigators were on that as well. So it was like literally a federal case. So that did, like I said, initially garner more attention. But as we covered in our episode on her, you know, it completely dropped off. So anyway, all of that is to say is that Gillette, Wyoming is a teeny tiny rural town. And so clearly things like this do not happen very often, unlike Baltimore or Chicago, right? Much larger populations.
Sure.
things like that. So yeah. I don't know if that's why or what the deal is, but they have jumped on this case and have put resources toward it.
And I guess they've put information out also?
Yeah, they have. They've actually made a couple of press releases. They are actively seeking the public's assistance.
Wow.
I know. Okay. I know.
I'm eager.
Yeah. So let's get to the story of Irene Gakwa. Irene Wairimu Gakwa was born in Nairobi, Kenya to Francis and Joyce Gakwa. She's the youngest of three children, and she has two older brothers, Kennedy and Chris. The Gakwa family has always been tight-knit and really supportive of each other. And it's this support that also allows them to be independent. All three of the siblings have always been very independent people, especially Irene. Like, not only would she go out and strike out on her own, but she was a little bit introverted as well. So she did a lot of things on her own in general. You know, she wasn't one of those people who had like a million friends. She would have like 3 to 5 close friends and then, you know, be friendly with people at work or school or whatever. Irene's older brothers decided to make new lives for themselves in the United States. So her oldest brother, Kennedy, went there first to attend college in Boise, which was not clear to me at first. I was like, how on earth did these people end up in Boise?
Right. Yeah. Who dreams of coming to the U.S. and settling in Boise, Idaho?
I know. And we're being rude because neither one of us has ever been to Idaho.
That's
and
very
I'm sure
true.
It's like an extremely lovely place.
Probably.
But it just seemed a little random from Kenya, you know?
Right.
So in any case, the three siblings are all about 5 years apart. So Kennedy came first, attended college, enjoyed it, decided to stay. Then Chris followed him, attended college, enjoyed it, decided to stay. Irene, however, didn't immediately follow suit. She decided to stay in Kenya and attend college there. So she did her college in Kenya and lived with her parents and worked in the tourism industry. But again, things were going like really well for her brothers. And, you know, Chris, for instance, got married, had kids, you know, like really they were settling and having a good life. So Irene decided that, you know, she wanted to broaden her horizons as well. So in May of 2019, she joined them in Idaho and all three siblings were reunited. When Irene arrived in the States, she moved in with her brother, Chris, and his wife, Joyce. Now, like I mentioned, they had kids, and so Irene, you know, was basically a live-in babysitter, kind of, which I'm sure was incredibly helpful
to
Chris and Joyce.
For sure. I wish we had that.
I know, that would be pretty amazing. Irene always had a caretaker personality, so, you know, she was well-suited to helping out her brother and sister-in-law with their kids, and she also got a job in a nursing home. After she got settled into life in the States, Irene also enrolled in school at the College of Western Idaho, where she was going to study nursing.
I thought you said she went to college in Kenya.
Well, yeah. So she went there specifically for nursing.
Oh, okay.
So she had already had her undergraduate degree in whatever, I actually don't know, but
gotcha.
Not nursing. So that was why she enrolled in school. And, you know, she started looking for love. Like, again, she's 29, 30 at this point and single and in a brand new country. So she seemingly found it, too, pretty quickly. It was on an online dating site that Irene ended up meeting Nathan Heitman. Heitman is 6 years Irene's senior, but that's really about all I know about him. I don't know, like, what he does for a living or anything like that. I mean, I do know that, spoiler alert, he seems to be a real piece of shit, but we'll kind of get to that later. So Rona from Jury File, who I mentioned earlier, she recently interviewed Irene's brother, Kennedy, for her show. And so Kennedy said that Irene lived with Chris for like 6 months or so. She ended up staying at his house for a couple more months and then got her own apartment. And so it was kind of during this period that she met Nathan and they started dating. They weren't dating super long before they ended up moving in together in Boise. And they ended up living there together for about a year and a half. Now, Irene's brothers weren't like a super big fan of Nathan or this relationship, but there wasn't much they could do about it. I mean, again, she's like 30.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she's an adult, so she can do whatever she wants.
Right. And like I mentioned, this is a really close-knit family. You know, they talked all the time. They usually saw each other every weekend. But they didn't really know Nathan that well. It just sounds like she didn't really bring him around a whole lot, or he didn't want to come around a whole lot. Like, the brothers just really didn't have a good handle on him. In that interview for Jury File, Kennedy said that Irene only brought Nathan over to like barbecues and, you know, stuff like that a handful of times. It was during one of these visits, however, that Nathan expressed his intention to marry Irene someday.
Okay.
Well, and that's kind of...
That's pretty quick.
Well, so. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess you said it about a year and a half.
Yeah, and I don't know together. At what point this conversation happened. So it wasn't necessarily quick, but what struck Kennedy as odd, he's like, I don't even know you. Like,
right. So why is he like even bringing that up to him?
Well, it's just like, no, it was kind of more of, all right, if you're going to marry my sister someday, like, you need to make an effort to be a part of this family. Like, you need to make an effort, you know, to be around us so we can get to know you and kind of know what type of guy you are before, like, I can give you my opinion on this idea, you know? But apparently, he didn't really make an effort. And Kennedy said that they were only invited over to Irene and Nathan's apartment, like, one time. He also started to notice that Irene was acting like a little bit more distant, you know, just not like herself. For instance, he said that he had a big party and Irene, of course, was planning on coming. But when the day of the party came, she just didn't show up, like didn't call him, didn't, you know, apologize. She just did not show up. And that was just completely out of character for her. So you can imagine how not thrilled they were when Irene announced that she and Nathan were moving to Gillette, Wyoming, which is about 800 miles or 1,300 kilometers away.
Was there a reason for them wanting to move there? Is it his job? I mean, you said she has a job in a nursing home. So.
Yeah, she had a job and was going to school in Boise.
Right.
Like, she had no objective reason to move to Gillette, Wyoming. I have no idea where that came from, like what precipitated this, you know, to that specific place. And Chris, her other brother, said that he thought she was moving to Arizona. So like apparently at some point she was telling the brothers like different things and the whole thing just seemed kind of sketchy. This announcement happened in mid-2021, so Irene was still fairly new to the U.S. Like, she had only been there for 2 years, and now she was going to move to some random town away from her family, her school, her job, and, you know, the friends that she had made. And this made simply no sense to her family. Again, it's like one thing to leave Kenya and go to school in Boise. Like, they're used to making big decisions and making big trips, but, like, they just didn't get it, you know?
To me, you know, just from the initial sound of everything, it sounds to me like Nathan is exhibiting behaviors of controlling, isolating her from her family, and then planning this trip, or this move, I should say, to completely isolate her and control her.
Bingo. Yeah, that's exactly what her brothers thought. Yeah, they believed that the distance was the point, basically. But, you know, despite their concerns, Irene moved with Nathan to Wyoming in July of 2021.
Oh, so she did go.
She went.
And it was Wyoming, not Arizona.
Right. Yeah, there's only one news article where Chris said something about Arizona and like, I don't know what that was and at what point she had said that. But I mean, Arizona, again, also very far away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And obviously the purpose of that is to completely isolate her from her family.
Yeah.
Shouldn't say that. We don't know if that was the purpose, but it certainly seems that way. Yes.
So Irene made the move and tried to make that and the relationship work. She enrolled in nursing school in Wyoming and got a new job. Now, at some point, too, and I don't know if it was before or after the move, because the timeline's a little unclear, they got engaged. And most of these, you know, most of these news articles refer to him as her fiance. So on the surface, you know, everything does seem to be going well, right? Because she re-enrolled in school. She got a job. They're engaged. Like, this just seems like a, you know, as weird as it may be, like taking the next steps in your life. However, again, according to her family, not everything was as rosy as it should have been. After the move, Irene started communicating less frequently with her brothers. And again, they believe that this was because of Nathan and his controlling ways. She was still talking to them, but it was different after she left. Fortunately, though, despite distancing herself from her brothers, Irene continued to keep in regular contact with her parents, and she video called them almost every other day. On February 24th, 2022, Irene made one of these video calls. Now, by this time, the cracks in her relationship with Nathan were beginning to show. I don't have specifics, but Kennedy did say that, like, they would be talking and she would describe something that Nathan did or said, and his reaction would just be like, that does not sound like something somebody would say or do, you know, who's supposed to, like, love you and want to be with you. So again, like, it wasn't just picking up and moving. Like, there were specific things that Irene brought up that he definitely saw as red flags. Despite re-enrolling in college and everything and, you know, making those moves, she also was having trouble adjusting to life in Gillette itself. As I mentioned earlier, it's an extremely rural town, which is not what she was used to at all, because Boise is a city.
Right.
Nairobi is a city. Like, that's what she's used to, you know? And plus, it is extremely cold, apparently, in Gillette, Wyoming, and she was not a fan. Being 800 miles away from her closest family members was starting to wear on her. But this phone call, this video call that she had with her parents on the 24th was fairly normal. I mean, just normal checking in, chatting type stuff. But a few days go by and there's not another call from her. So her parents are texting her to just check in and see what's going on. And they didn't get a response right away. So they, again, didn't think that was incredibly weird, even though she did, like I say, video call them often. She was also working full time and going to school. Like, they understood that she was busy. So she did eventually text them back and said just basically that, right? That she was busy and she'd like call on the weekend, you know, just kind of saying, hey, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Sorry. I'll call you when I can.
And when was the text?
So I don't have the exact dates of those texts.
Okay.
But it's like the week or so after this video call, February 24th, like the last week of February and like the first few days of March.
Okay.
So at one point, she also texts them and was like, hey, sorry, my phone fell in the water and the microphone is broken, so I can't call, but I'm going to get a new phone. And so once I get my new phone, you know, I'll definitely call you guys.
Okay. Oddly specific.
Right. But, you know, you have to give a reason why you're only texting and not calling.
Sure.
But of course, that call never came. However, the texts did continue, at least sporadically, but they were strange. In one message to Kennedy, Irene said that she was getting a new phone, so she asked to be taken off of the family plan that she was on with him. All three of the Gawkwa siblings, as well as like Chris's kids and, you know, wife and everybody, they were all on the same family plan to save money. And so Kennedy thought it was like weird for her to be taken off of that because it would be more expensive, you know? But again, that's just one of those things. It's like, okay, this woman is in her 30s. Like, if she wants to be taken off of the family plan, she can be taken off of the family plan.
Yeah, of course. It's just, it's a pattern of behavior that's showing. And of course, you know, we're looking at it in hindsight because she's missing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I'm sure going through it, it's like, oh, all of these little things seem odd, but they're not adding up to like a giant red flag. Like, oh my God, something terrible is about to happen.
Exactly. Nobody's panicking or anything like that. They just think that Irene's acting a little weird, but things continue to get weirder. Her parents continued to call and text and check in and ask when they could, you know, have another video call. But Irene, again, would just kind of brush them off. Then on March 3rd, she sent a message, and I'm not clear if I believe it was either just to her parents or to her parents and the brothers, because they had a group chat too. But in any case, she sent this message saying that she was going to move to Texas.
Okay.
Yeah, the message was like, I don't like Gillette. It's cold. I'm going to move to Texas.
Like with Nathan or?
It doesn't. Nothing I've read specifies whether she said she was moving with Nathan or just on her own.
That's just so random. Like why, you know, if things are going bad between her and Nathan, then you would assume that she would move back to Idaho to be with her brothers.
Yeah.
Like what? And you know, there's no, she's still in school.
Mm-hmm.
She has a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, that's very, very random.
Well, yeah. And that's what they thought too. They're like, Texas? But what was even more confusing and suspicious to them was that this message was written in English. Now, you know, Irene, of course, spoke English fluently, but when she messaged her parents, she always messaged them in Swahili, which is their native language.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very weird that she was writing this message to her parents. And again, her brothers might have been on this, I'm not sure. But in any case, it was just very weird that she was writing this message in English to her parents. That's just not what she did.
So again, hindsight, huge red flags.
Well, that one wasn't even so much hindsight. Like that at the time, March 3rd, when they got that text, they're like, okay, wait, no, something is wrong. Like they didn't know what was wrong, but there was something's wrong. And so that's when everybody kind of got together, like the siblings and the parents, and they're like, okay, what's going on with Irene? Like, have you guys seen her? Have you guys talked to her? Like, you know, and they started to compare notes. And what they found was that, you know, nobody had seen her. And by seen, I mean, you know, on video.
Right.
Or spoken to her.
Since the 24th.
Exactly. They had just been getting these like sporadic, weird texts. So then they're concerned. And they're starting to think that something might be wrong, though they don't really know what. So the brothers end up calling the Gillette Police Department, and they're like, hey, listen, we live in Boise. Our sister lives there. Like, we haven't heard from her. We can't get in touch with her. Can you go and do a welfare check? And so the Gillette Police agree. Police went to the home that Irene shared with Nathan, but they did not find Irene. What they did get was quite a story from Nathan.
Okay, let's hear it.
Nathan told Gillette police that in late February, Irene returned home from eating dinner and told him that she was leaving him. She then packed her clothing into two plastic bags, told him goodbye, and was picked up by someone in a dark SUV. He never saw or heard from her again.
Okay, assuming that's true.
Sure.
Which, like, I get that Nathan was not close or even really knew her brothers all that well, but right. Like, you would think that, like, your fiance just up and left, there'd be some sort of panic, like, what the hell's going on? Maybe reach out to one of the brothers and say, hey, this is what's happening. Like, your sister's off on her own. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And
that's assuming this story, which is complete bullshit, is true.
Right. And that's exactly what her brothers thought. They're like, what the hell? Like, pick up the phone. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that doesn't, why would you not reach out to us? Like, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
And because, again, he said this happened at the end of February. It's like March 4th this point.
He's just like, well, shit.
You win some, you lose some. Like, what?
Guess I'll just hang out in my place and not talk to anybody about this.
Yeah. And I don't know what significance this has or if it does have any significance at all, but it extremely bothers me that he said that she packed her clothes into two plastic bags.
Yeah.
Like, this woman moved her entire life from Kenya to the United States 2 years prior to this and moved 800 miles from Idaho to Wyoming 6 months prior to this, and you're trying to tell me that she doesn't have a fucking suitcase?
Yeah, right.
Like, what?
She's kind of in practice with moving. So
yes.
Spontaneous or not, you know, it's not like it takes the same amount of effort to throw your clothes in a plastic bag than it does in a suitcase.
Yeah, more. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, I can never find plastic bags when I need them, but like, I know where my suitcase is. Like, it's just, it bothers me so much. And I don't know what the reason is, other than the fact that her suitcases are still in the closet or wherever she keeps them, and he's looking for a reason to explain that. I don't know.
Or he's looking for a reason to explain in the future, if possibly they find her clothes in two trash bags in a garbage bin somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point too. So at this point, like, the family doesn't really know what to think. You know, they obviously think that the story is insane, but like, they don't know what actually happened. And, you know, the police aren't going to open an investigation because, like, they have no reason not to just take this guy at his word, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, again, this, you know, she's an adult. If that story is true,
right,
then she left of her own free will. There's no police action needed.
Exactly. So, like, they don't start an investigation or anything at this point, right? Again, the timeline is like a little kind of fuzzy. This is around March 4th. You know, I think after that, the family, the brothers are like still trying to like talk to Nathan. I do know that he did talk to them a few times. I don't know exactly like when, you know, I don't have a tight timeline on that. But, and of course, they're still trying to like get in touch with her and things like that. On March 8th, though, so just about, you know, 4 days after this police visit, Irene's WhatsApp account, which is how she mainly communicated with her parents and on which they had this like family group chat, was deleted.
Hmm. Okay.
Then on March 10th, her phone service was canceled altogether.
But wasn't she still on the family plan?
I think she had gotten off of the family plan. Yeah. So on March 20th, 2022, Irene's brothers ended up filing a missing persons report with the Gillette Police Department.
So almost a month since she was last seen.
Exactly. Now, it should be noted that in addition to never reaching out to Irene's family after she, quote unquote, left him, he also never offered to help search for her. So I think that after they really, really realized that Irene was truly missing, the brothers did drive to Gillette and, you know, tried to talk to Nathan, tried to look for her, tried to figure out what's going on. But Nathan, like, never offered to help look. He never, you know, gave them any information that might be helpful. Like, these are the restaurants where she likes to eat. Like, you know, these are some of the places she would go. Like, anything like that. You know, he did not help them in any way. And according to Kennedy, after they got police involved, to which I think he means after the missing persons case was officially opened, Nathan just stopped answering their calls altogether. And he wasn't much more helpful to police. According to the Gillette Police Department, Nathan did not make himself available to investigators to answer questions related to Irene's disappearance.
Hmm.
So by mid-April, they officially named him as a person of interest in her case and said that Irene went missing under suspicious circumstances. And again, you know, it's what I kind of talked about in the beginning about how this investigation is different from those of other Black women we've covered on this show. You know, the Gillette Police Department, unfortunately, was not aware that Irene was missing.
Right.
You know, until nearly a month later, like you just pointed out. But once they were informed, they started an investigation and like actually investigated this disappearance, which seems incredibly basic. But as we have seen, sometimes that just doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
Or if it does happen, it's just the most basic cursory investigation you could ask for. But in this case, Gillette Police has interviewed her friends and associates. You know, they tried to interview Nathan, although they said that that did not work. They also started looking into her cell phone and location data, you know, her financial, everything, right? Everything that you would expect and want them to do. And during the course of the investigation up to this point, they have executed 24 search warrants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's obviously not just where she lived, but maybe where she worked, went to school.
Again, they're not giving a ton of specifics in terms of that because, again, very active investigation. So I don't know. Yeah. They just said 24 search warrants. But, you know, there is some information that they are releasing that they believe that the public can help them with. Through this investigation, they have identified several disturbing leads. One of which is that on February 24th, which is the same day that Irene was last seen on that video call, Nate Heitman bought a 55-gallon drum.
Is he making like a rain?
Oh, like a rain, rain barrel. I don't know. But neighbors reported that the next day, the 25th, they saw him burning something in his backyard.
Mm. Not good.
No. They also found that contrary to, you know, her text saying that she was moving to Texas or, you know, that or Nate's story that he left her at the end of February, Irene's phone never left the Gillette area and they were able to get pings in Gillette up until March 4th. Investigators, of course, also looked into her credit cards and bank statements because, you know, maybe she just left Nathan, but like didn't leave Jeanette. You know, or maybe she hung around until March 4th and then went somewhere else.
Sure.
You know, they needed to figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So when they pulled all of these statements, lo and behold, they found that Irene's cards were in fact being used.
Shocker, probably by Nate.
Well, yeah. That is actually what they found. When police checked the surveillance footage at the locations where her cards were used, they did not see Irene. They saw Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
The first purchase he made with Irene's card was at Walmart. There, he bought a shovel, a pair of pants, and a pair of boots.
Just like outlining how to dispose of a body.
I mean, honestly, with her fucking credit card, like talk about insult to injury. In the days right after she was last seen, he buys a 55-gallon drum, a shovel, boots, and a pair of pants. Now, police found the shovel and the boots in his home and presumably took them into evidence.
I'm sure they did.
There were 40 charges total made to one of Irene's cards. The first 13 were made between February 25th and 28th and totaled $804.60, which was substantially more than Irene usually spent. The card was used 27 more times between March 1st and March 19th for an additional $2,426. Nathan also transferred money out of Irene's bank account to his Zelle account. These transfers totaled $3,666.46. He then changed the password on her bank account on February 25th. All of these transfers, as well as 10 online transactions made on Irene's credit card, which he maxed out, by the way, were traced to his device's IP address.
So at this point, did the police go and talk to him about this?
Oh, yeah. And I'll get to that in a moment because that wasn't it.
Oh, there's more.
Yeah.
Oh.
Her Gmail account was also traced to his IP address, and that was then deleted from that device on March 10th. So he was also using her Gmail account. On May 10th, 2022, police arrested Nathan Heitman on 5 felony charges, including 2 counts of felony theft, two counts of crimes against intellectual property and unlawful use of a credit card. Now, the intellectual property charges stem from him using her Gmail account and from changing the bank password. On May 11th, Nathan appeared in circuit court where his bond was set for $10,000 and a preliminary hearing was set for May 19th. Now, this is much less than the $100,000 bond that the prosecution had asked for, citing Nathan's lack of ties to Gillette and the, quote, serious crimes he was charged with. Nathan's attorney asked for a $5,000 bond, saying that his charges were nonviolent and not related to Irene's disappearance.
Sure. She leaves and then he's like, oh, well, she left her credit cards here, so I guess I'm just going to go on a shopping spree.
Yeah. And also, she left him and didn't take her credit cards.
Right.
And like,
doesn't need any of her money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like left her bank account untouched until he took all of her money and maxed out her credit card. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Now, these charges are serious. Obviously, they're felonies, but police are clearly trying to use them to put pressure on Nathan.
Yeah.
Nathan's attorney, Steve Titus, essentially called bullshit on these tactics, telling the Longview News Record, quote, "They could have easily charged him with a crime in the last 2 or 3 months, and they haven't. Essentially, law enforcement, I don't think, has the probable cause to charge Mr. Heitman with a crime related to anything dealing with the disappearance of Ms. Gakwa," end quote.
Yeah, I mean, they probably don't have any evidence at this point.
Like, I don't think that they're not charging him to just because they don't want to. Like,
yeah, it's kind of an asinine statement.
It is. I mean,
they're building a case.
Yeah, exactly. And much like the arrests in the Oakley Carlson case, which again, were also for serious charges that they should have been arrested for regardless, right?
Right.
Just like these were. I believe that the police are taking their time to build as strong of a case against Nathan as possible.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go in half-cocked. And again, Irene has not been found. So if they are trying to build a murder case or kidnapping or anything, it is hard to do that when you don't know where she is, right?
Right.
It's not impossible, and I don't doubt that if it comes down to it, they'll do that, but they clearly want to find her first.
Yeah.
To wit, police also started asking the public if they have seen a gray or silver Subaru Crosstrek with Idaho license plates that may have been seen trespassing on private property or in rural parts of Campbell County between February 24th and March 20th.
Is that Nathan's car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in Campbell County is where Gillette,
right,
Wyoming is.
I assumed.
Yeah. Police said that they were following a lead that Irene may have been taken to a gas or oil location or a mining site. It's dark. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have a barrel, you have a shovel, you have mining sites, gas oil sites. It's bad. And, you know, the problem is, too, that there are a ton of these around Gillette. So searching every single one is not possible. So police really do need a witness or something else to go on. Now, again, you know, I'm sure that if they hadn't already, they'll be able to get his cell phone data. And hopefully using that location data, they might be able to get some more information on where he was in the days after Irene was last seen. But again, you know, that's just kind of speculation at this point because it is so active. They're obviously not going to.
Yeah, they're not going to leak that.
Yeah, that's like a little too much. Nathan Heitman was arraigned on May 31st and pleaded not guilty to all of the charges brought against him, though, and you're going to love this. At some point, I don't think it was during the plea, I think it was during the interview after his arrest, he admitted that he took the money.
Okay.
He was like, yeah, no, you're right. That's me on the Walmart camera. Like, you're right. I'm the one who transferred all of that money out of her bank account to my Zelle account and changed the password. But it's not because I did anything nefarious to Irene. It was so it would force her to contact me.
Bullshit.
Because that makes much more sense than calling her family and saying, "Hey, Irene packed up her shit into plastic bags and suddenly left me. I'm really bummed about it. Do you think you could have her call me?"
Like, or even calling her phone?
Right.
I mean, right?
One would think.
I'm sure the police looked into that, but there probably wasn't any communication between Nate and her.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Of course. And so, honestly, you know, her family obviously thinks something bad happened to her. They think it happened very shortly after February 24th. And they think that the majority, if not all of those texts, were not from Irene. The police are officially asking for information between February 24th and March 20th. March 20th is when their investigation officially began. But I think in reality, the timeline of what happened to Irene is much tighter than that. It really does seem like we're really looking at February 24th to like the 26th, maybe, you know, because that's when he made the barrel. The that's when he was, right. Yeah, that's when he bought the shovel. That's when he was burning something in the yard. Like, it seems as though something happened to Irene very soon after that last video call.
Right, but they're widening it, specifically the lookout for his car.
Right,
In those locations, because we don't know if she's dead, if she's in the barrel. We don't know when he moved her.
Right. Oh, and so, thank you. Yeah. So the thing about the barrel, too, is they are also asking people, you know, about the barrel in addition to the car. And they said that the barrel may have been used as a burn barrel or may have just been abandoned somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. So they want people to look out for both.
Right.
Nathan Heitman's case has been transferred from circuit court to district court. He has a pretrial hearing scheduled for September 1st, 2022, and the jury trial is scheduled to begin on October 3rd. In the meantime, Gillette Police and Irene's family are still actively searching for Irene. So again, if you are in the Gillette, Wyoming area, especially in Campbell County, the car in question has Idaho license plates. I cannot imagine that there are a ton of those, you know? There are a ton of Subaru cross trucks, but not with Idaho plates. Mm-hmm. So if you have seen that at all since late February into the third week of March, please, please, please contact the Gillette police. Kennedy told Cowboy State Daily, quote, "I sit at home wondering if I'm doing all I can. I wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning worrying and thinking of my sister," end quote. He also urges anyone who may have any information, no matter how insignificant, to contact police, saying, quote, "Sometimes people think I saw this or I saw that and it's not important, but it could be the clue that police need. It's worth sharing," end quote. Gakwa has been missing from Gillette, Wyoming since sometime between February 24th and March 20th, 2022. She was last physically seen on February 24th on video. Irene is a black female with brown hair and brown eyes. She wears glasses. Her native language is Swahili, but she speaks fluent English. She is 5'1" tall and between 89 and 100 pounds. Irene is 32 years old. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Irene Gakwa, or if you have seen a gray or silver Subaru Crosstrek with Idaho license plates that may have been seen trespassing on private property or in rural parts of Campbell County between February 24th and March 20th, 2022, please contact the Gillette Police Department at 307-682-5155. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWGPod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Dethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.